If you love the History Extra podcast, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. You know Amazon Prime is not just a shipping subscription, right? It's got everything, including streaming TV and movies on Prime Video. And of course, Prime's fast, free shipping. Go from watching your favorite shows to getting your favorite things. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
Ah yes, the magnificent Trolley Sour Bright Crawler, also known as Trollicus brightolus. The worm's captivating neon colour makes it an easy, gummy prey.
Trolley!
It's a surprisingly sour, invitingly chewy, staggeringly snackable species unlike anything else found on this planet.
Eat me!
Delicious. Visit trolley.com to shop now.
Trolley, eat me!
Hello and welcome to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine, Britain's best-selling history magazine. I'm Ellie Cawthorne. As the Titanic sank into the icy depths of the Atlantic, did the band really play on deck? And is it true that the cruise liner could have stayed afloat if it had hit the iceberg head on? In today's Everything You Wanted to Know episode, Tim Moulton answers your questions about the maritime disaster of 1912. He was joined in conversation by BBC History Revealed magazine editor Charlotte Hodgman. Tim, thank you very much for joining us today. What we're going to be doing today is we've had lots of questions actually from readers and social media followers around Titanic. And we've also got some popular search engine questions as well. So I think perhaps if we start with some of the popular search engine questions, we kind of put a little bit of context around Titanic. So first off, I mean, how big was Titanic, and, you know, how was it built? Where was it built? That kind of thing.
Sure. Well, Titanic was 882 feet long and about 92 feet wide. Mm-hmm. She was built at Holland and Wolff Shipyard in Belfast. And she was one of a twin. So her other sister was called the Olympic. And they were both the largest ships in the world.
So some of our followers on Instagram wanted to know about the disparities between the classes on board. How were classes separated, during sailing?
Well, in 1912, there was quite a rigid class structure on transatlantic liners. And in particular, the Titanic had a third class, a second class and a first class. And that was actually very rigidly upheld because there were immigration laws into the US, which meant that third class and second class had to be kept segregated. And this was supposed to be to stop the spread of infectious diseases. And therefore, whilst Titanic was on her voyage, there were Berthon gates, which were metal gates, drawn across the corridors that separated third from second class. However, once there was a distress situation and they decided to abandon ship at about midnight on the 14th of April 1912, they did actually open up those gates. The reason why third class passengers are sort of shown in films to be locked down behind the gates is because that's what happened in the first 20 minutes after the collision. So Titanic collided at 11:40 p.m. and then it took them 20 minutes to assess the damage and work out that they were going to abandon ship. And it was only at the point that they worked out that they were going to sink that they opened those gates.
Right, OK. And does that explain why so many sort of third-class passengers were trapped below decks when it sank?
Well, I'm glad you said that, Charlotte, because that is actually a myth, and hopefully today we'll bust a few myths. But yes, in fact, they sent first and second-class stewards down to help the third-class stewards to direct third-class to the boat deck from, in fact, from midnight. And the last Titanic didn't sink until 2:20 in the morning. The reason why so many third class died is a couple of reasons. First of all, the first class passengers had access to the boats first because they were physically nearer to the boats. There were no actual lifeboats on the third class deck. So third class had to sort of find their way up to the boat deck. Although, as I said, they did get assistance in that. So the first thing is a slightly first come first served is that the first class passengers and second class are kind of there near the lifeboats, as it were. But the other major factor is, and the main reason why so many more percentage more of third class drowned than first and second, is because they had third class, many of them were traveling with big families. They were traveling for a new life in America. So a lot of them had their children with them. And in fact, in 1912, you were a man when you were 13. So what that means was a lot of women, for example, and fathers wouldn't want to part with their 13-year-old sons and leave them on the deck of Titanic. So they chose to stay with them. And you can imagine a family such as the Goodwins, who had 8 children, many of which were under the age of 13. You can imagine that the whole family would choose to stay together rather than separate. And it was for that reason that so many more third class drowned.
Right. OK. Go About Europe on Instagram wanted to know what were the prices for the different grades of passage. And I think I'd like to also add, what would you get for that as well?
Absolutely. So third class was, in 1912 money, about £5. Now, you can actually times that by 100 today to get an idea of what that is in today's money. So let's say equivalent today of third class would be about £500. Yeah. And you can imagine it almost a bit like airfare prices today, if that makes sense. So £500 would have got you a nice little bed, a washstand. It should be said that third class on Titanic was as good, if not better, than second class on many other smaller ships. So all the third class would have felt they were in luxury. Third class also had hot and cold running water, which they wouldn't have had in their own homes. So it would really have been luxurious for everyone on Titanic. And then it was about 3 times more than third class for second class. So second class was about £15, which is about £1,500 in today's money. And then first class was about 3 times more than that. It kind of goes up by a factor of 3 for each class. So you'd be thinking about £5,000 in today's money for first class. However, there were some suites and they would be about £80,000, the suites. Wow. But actually, that's a bit like travelling on the Queen Mary II today, for example. Mm. So in many ways, the prices were not dissimilar from today, but obviously the luxury was much greater. The amount of space you had was much greater in first class in the suites, and therefore they were perhaps more expensive than even the most luxury cabins today.
So sort of moving on to some more questions then. So McMumio on Instagram wanted to know, I mean, I'm sure you've seen the 1997 film Titanic. Obviously, the plot is fiction, but how accurate were the film's portrayals of the ship's surroundings and the kind of sequence of events?
Fairly accurate. The film was a great spectacle, and the sets, I don't think the Titanic's ever been recreated so accurately in terms of the sets and the look and feel and the clothes and the, you know, the chinaware and all that sort of stuff. So that was marvellously done. But obviously for diehard Titanic fans like myself, I was a little bit dismayed that they messed around with the storyline so much, because obviously for me, the real amazing things about Titanic are the true stories. And in a way, I believe that the truth is always stranger than fiction. So for me, I think one could have made a film as exciting, but looking at things which really, really did happen. But that said, of course, the film brought Titanic to a huge audience. And I dare say that the film I would have made would have had less box office success.
Okay, and SNCP 2021 wanted to know, is it true that enough lifeboats could have been fitted, but it was chosen not to do so?
Yes, absolutely. And this is an excellent question. So Titanic was designed at a time when the Board of Trade were reviewing the rules on how many lifeboats you were allowed to carry. And it's worth going into a little bit of detail on this answer because it's rather interesting. Basically, if you actually want to have enough lifeboats for everyone on board a ship, you actually need to have enough lifeboats for twice the number of people on the ship. And that's because ships normally list to port or starboard. So they lean one way or the other, in other words. And what that means is it puts out of action all the lifeboats down one side of the ship. So in fact, what the Board of Trade wanted to do is instead of having vessels piled high with lifeboats, making them unstable and requiring a huge amount of crew to row them in the event of an emergency, what they wanted to do is actually reward ship owners for properly subdividing their vessels and making vessels have watertight compartments and making the vessels themselves safer. So what they did is they said, if your ship is very well built and passes our tests, which obviously Titanic did, then you are allowed to only carry enough lifeboats that are needed to ferry passengers from the stricken vessel to another nearby ship.
Another question that's been quite popular is why do you think that this particular sinking looms so much larger in collective memory than other ship disasters?
Absolutely. Well, it was one of the worst peacetime maritime disasters in history. It occurred before the horrors of the First World War, where obviously thousands and thousands of men died in the trenches, etc. So it was quite shocking. For what happened is the Victorians brought on science and progress. The Edwardians brought on labour laws and they improved diet and life expectancy was going up. And basically, if you like, science and mankind's ingenuity, if you like, was conquering nature. So they didn't expect that the best they could do, this wonderful ship, would actually sink on its maiden voyage before even getting to its destination of New York for the first time. And that was very shocking to people. But the other reason is, which is perhaps slightly deeper, is that as human beings, we love tragedy. There's something about, you know, the smallness of human beings and the vastness of nature that really appeals to the human condition. So our tragedies today are things like the Titanic. And the Titanic is the perfect tragedy because no one was really to blame. Everyone was trying their best and trying their hardest. And really, she sank because of the awesome power of nature.
Joe Pierce on Twitter wanted to know whether a string quartet actually played on deck of the ship as it sunk, or was that a myth and something that's kind of been created for films?
Both. So there was an orchestra on the Titanic and they did very bravely play to keep people calm and obviously entertained as well while they were cooling their heels and waiting for the lifeboats to become ready. However, after the last lifeboats were gone from the ship, then the band did stop playing. So the lifeboats had gone. The ship lasted about another half an hour after the lifeboats had all gone, and there was no playing of instruments at that time. But of course, all the survivors were in the lifeboats. No one survived Titanic who didn't eventually make it into a lifeboat. So the perception was that the band was playing as they left the ship, which is true. It should be noted that they did actually sort of rush down to their cabins and get warm things. And they strapped their musical instruments to their backs and jumped in the water, and in fact, the bodies of some of the musicians were in fact recovered after the sinking.
Saskia on Twitter wanted to know, why did the ship sail so close to icebergs? Was this a calculated risk or was the iceberg adrift?
Well, a brilliant question, a brilliant question. In a nutshell, it was a calculated risk. So in 1912, you couldn't just sort of sail about anywhere on the North Atlantic as a liner, a passenger liner. There was a westbound track to New York, which was laid down as a particular line that ships should follow. And there was an eastbound track from New York to Europe. The tracks were about 60 miles apart, and that was to avoid collisions in fog of ships going different ways. And Titanic was right where she should be. She was on her westbound track to New York. They'd had many reports of ice, so they knew they were entering into an ice area. However, the weather was extremely clear. There was no moon, but there were lots of stars out. And the sort of common knowledge among captains in 1912 was, in fact, that as long as it was clear weather, you would always be able to see an iceberg in time to avoid it. So what the Titanic did, instead of slow down, is she posted good lookouts in the crow's nest, and she darkened down her hatches in front of the bridge so that everything was dark before the bridge to give the officers on Titanic the best night vision. And in fact, even to avoid having any glass in the way looking ahead, in fact, Murdoch, who was in charge of Titanic that night, actually stood out on the wing bridge so that he had an absolutely clear view ahead. And unfortunately, they were caught out eventually by the weather conditions. But that's perhaps another part of the question.
Right. OK. Was it possible for anyone to kind of bypass the captain's orders sort of regarding icebergs and things like that?
Well, they wouldn't have wanted to, because they were all running the ship together. They all respected Captain Smith very much. They were all very capable officers themselves. In fact, Murdoch was one of the most capable officers. And in fact, Captain Smith didn't want to sail on Titanic without Murdoch because of Murdoch's experience on the Olympic, which was the same size as Titanic, as I said earlier. So the point being is that they all believed it was safe to travel at that speed in those conditions in the ice region. They knew they were getting into the ice region, and they were keeping a sharp lookout for ice. Unfortunately, because of the very cold water they were traveling through, there was a slight haze on the horizon, all around the horizon, and unfortunately that slightly delayed them seeing the iceberg, and they nearly missed it. They jolly nearly missed it. They just grazed it, and I'm afraid that created a 200 feet of damage along Titanic's hull. And that was only about the equivalent of a sort of fireplace, if you like, in size. But because it was spread out over five watertight compartments, it meant that the Titanic would eventually sink.
Right. I mean, what sort of safety features were in place on Titanic to kind of prevent it from sinking, if that sort of thing, if it had hit an iceberg?
Well, a lot. First of all, she had a double bottom. So Titanic's hull was quite flat-bottomed, but it had a double skin. So there was about a one-foot gap between the outer bottom of the Titanic and the inner bottom of Titanic, and both of them were watertight. So she had a double bottom, but her double skin did not extend up the sides of the vessel. So Brunel's Great Britain and Great Eastern actually had a double skin throughout the ships, whereas Titanic, possibly to save money, had just a double bottom. But what Titanic did have, like Brunel ships as well, but she had 15 watertight compartments, and they went right the way up to the deck, or nearly right the way up to the top deck. And they were to create cells, and safety cells, if you like. And Titanic could float with any four of her first watertight compartments flooded. And she could float with any two compartments in conjunction flooded anywhere in the ship. And this is because the builders thought that the worst thing that would happen to Titanic would be a collision with another vessel on the point where two watertight compartments joined, thus breaching two compartments. What they didn't bank on was the very unusual kind of side swipe disaster which happened to Titanic. And I'm afraid she just wasn't built for five of her forward compartments to be breached. She was built for four of them to be breached, but she was not built for five.
It's incredibly unlucky. Laura-Lise on Instagram wanted to know, so if the ship had hit the iceberg straight on, would it have remained afloat?
Yes, it would have done. It would have done. One of the designers of the Titanic, obviously the chief designer of Titanic, Thomas Andrews, actually drowned aboard the vessel, died in the sinking. Edward Wilding was another one of the naval architects involved, or marine architects, I should say, involved in the construction of Titanic. And he gave evidence at the Titanic inquiry in London. And he did explain that if Titanic had hit the iceberg head on, it would have killed all the firemen who were sleeping down in the bow. Probably about 80 firemen would have been killed, or at least 40, because half of them were stoking, but half of them were in their bunks. So it would have killed those people sleeping in the front, in the bow, and it would have stove in the first 100 feet of Titanic's bow. But it wouldn't actually even have thrown people out of their beds, the impact, because it would have created a crumple zone in Titanic. So rather like a car decelerating from 20 miles an hour to zero in 100 feet, it wouldn't have felt any more of a shock than that.
Yeah. I mean, how quickly did people realise that the ship was going to sink and then it was inevitable?
Not very quickly at all. In fact, even the captain didn't really believe she was going to sink until midnight, when Thomas Andrews came up from a 20-minute inspection of the vessel and explained to Captain Smith that the vessel would be unable to float. And there were several reasons for that, but the main reason was that the weight of water in the first five compartments would eventually be so heavy, if you like, that the bow of Titanic would be dragged under, and then it would tip up and it would put more water into the unbreached watertight bulkheads by flowing over the top of those. So rather like an ice cube tray that you might have in your fridge freezer at home. You know, once the first few cells are underwater, it will drag in the other cells.
Another popular question is kind of around the insurance money. So we've had a few questions on social media asking why was the insurance increased by White Star Line before it sailed, and also how much insurance money was paid out after the sinking?
Sure. So people love a conspiracy theory, and this is one of them. This is one of them. Titanic's insurance was not increased before she sank. People love to sort of think about, you know, sort of scams and things that were going on that were wrong. But I'm afraid that's an armchair view, and that didn't happen. So the first thing is it wasn't increased, nor were the ships swapped or any other sort of nonsense like that people do tend to talk about on the internet. But what I can tell you is insurance money was paid out. About £1 million of insurance money was paid out.
Right. Is that was to the whites? Who was that paid to?
It was mainly for passengers for loss of life and loss of belongings and things like that.
Right. Okay.
Cargo.
Okay. And what about the mystery ship that's always sort of spoken about? Patrick, can you sort of go explain a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. So the so-called mystery ship was not a mystery. she was the Californian. She was about 12 miles away from the Titanic when the Titanic collided. And unfortunately, because of the very cold water conditions that Titanic sank in, and because there was actually a slightly warmer air higher up, it actually distorted, I'm afraid, how they saw Titanic from the deck of the Californian. And unfortunately, they thought she was a 400-foot ship about 5 miles away sinking, in some sort of trouble, rather than the biggest ship in the world, an 800-foot ship sinking 10 miles away. And very unfortunately, and this is slightly complicated for listeners, but it's worth bearing with me on this one. But basically, not every ship had radio in 1912. Only a few of the big ones did. But they knew that Titanic did. And when they looked at this ship that was looking a bit distorted because of the weather conditions, they concluded that that was not the Titanic. They therefore made the false conclusion that the ship they were looking at did not have radio. And therefore, they got their Morse lamp out to signal to the Titanic. But first of all, the ship they were signalling to was actually twice as far away as they thought it was. So that made it hard to read. And the other thing is that there was very stratified air at Titanic's crash site. And we know that from the survivors seeing smoke in layers and things like that. And unfortunately, the slight turbulence in those layers created the stars to flash on and off. And in fact, the survivors said that it was like the stars were Morse coding to each other about the calamity that was happening below. But unfortunately, that flashing actually scrambled the sense out of the Morse lamp signals. So it was a series of disasters and problems. And the other thing is that when Titanic's rockets were sent up, they appeared to be very low-lying. And that's because the rockets were exploding in the warmer air higher up, whereas Titanic was magnified, if you like, in the cold air lower down. So it was a very confusing thing. And then listeners might be thinking, well, okay, but there was a lot going on, so why didn't that ship just come and investigate? And the answer is that Captain Lord had never been in the ice region before. He'd been a bit frightened because he nearly ran into an ice barrier that was 3 miles wide and 75 miles long that was completely blocking the passage to New York. And he decided that it was better to wait until daylight, which was only a few hours away, 3 or 4 hours away, he decided it was better to wait until daylight when he could actually go and investigate and do some good, rather than risking the lives of his own crew for probably what was a small cargo vessel that was getting into some difficulty. You know, he thought it might have lost her rudder or something like that. So he took the decision not to go. Had he realised it was the Titanic, obviously he would have gone, and he regretted the decision for the rest of his life.
Still to come on the History Extra podcast.
There was some flexibility to the cabins on Titanic, and we don't know from the records exactly how they were, jigged at the time. So what I'm trying to say is, although there are lots of records, there is a lot of uncertainty about what happened as well.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. You know Amazon Prime is not just a shipping subscription, right? It's got everything, including streaming TV and movies on Prime Video. And of course, Prime's fast, free shipping. Go from watching your favorite shows to getting your favorite things. Whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
Captain Smith has often been made out to be the kind of villain of the tragedy. You know, what sort of man was he? He was a very experienced man, wasn't he? Was he in any way to blame for what happened?
Well, not really. I mean, he was to blame because he was the captain. So ultimately, the buck stopped with him, if you like. But equally, Bruce Ismay was on board, who was employing the captain and who owned the ship. So you could argue that he was like a super captain, if you like, and that the blame lay with him.
Yeah.
In fact, it was a series of accidents, and they were all the most experienced people. They were all the best and most reliable people. They were all the most skilled people. But unfortunately, the freak weather conditions in the ice field in which Titanic sank caught them all out. Without getting too scientific, over the ice field that Titanic sank in, there was a thing called a thermal inversion, and that creates a thing called abnormal refraction, which is a posh word for light bending abnormally. And I'm afraid it was that abnormal light bending that I'm afraid meant that they couldn't see icebergs when they thought they could.
Right, okay. Another question on Instagram was around whether there was an investigation afterwards to determine, you know, what had happened and whether the ship's design had contributed to the sinking.
That's a very good question. And there was. So, in fact, quite shockingly, within 7 days of the survivors arriving in New York on the Carpathia, which rescued them, not the Californian, which didn't rescue them, but the Carpathia, which did rescue them, they were all summoned before Senator Smith, who convened a special inquiry. And he interviewed a lot of the officers and passengers of Titanic to try and get to the bottom of the tragedy and what happened. And then, not content with the US inquiry, the British Board of Trade had their own inquiry also in 1912 about the disaster. So Titanic disaster is actually one of the best documented in history. And in fact, we've got a lot of eyewitness testimony that was taken down in those, if you like, court cases about the Titanic. And that's how we actually know so much about it.
What did they find? What was the findings of that investigation?
Well, in a way, it was really found that it was an act of God, if you like. It was found that it was no one's fault. Although there was another inquiry in 1913, which actually found the White Star Line to be negligent in its navigation. I don't actually agree with that finding, but nevertheless, that was the finding. So White Star was eventually found to be to blame. But I think people did realise that it was a series of incredible events that came together. And that's why it's a tragedy that we're still talking about today, because there were probably 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 things which contributed to it.
Yeah. Laura Leese on Instagram wanted to know whether there were any famous paintings, treasures, jewellery, etc. that were lost in the sinking.
Yes, absolutely. There were. In fact, there was a very famous jewelled book of the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, which was a popular publication at the time. Obviously an ancient text, but a popular ancient text at the time. And it was studded with all sorts of rubies and precious gems and gold leaf and things like that. And that was the property of a book collector. And that was a priceless item. It was actually going for auction in New York at the time. I think the reserve price on it was 200,000, which is about £2 million for a book today. So that was a treasure which had taken years to make, which was lost. Also, Mr. Carter had a very smart red car, which was I think it was a Renault, and that was actually lost in the sinking as well. But in terms of actual artworks, I think it was really there were some priceless works by Bacon of books, but nothing. I'm sure some of the passengers had some valuable paintings which they'd brought in Europe and things like that, but that was kind of the most of the treasures that were lost. Of course, the main thing that was lost that was of value was all the lives of the women and children and men who died in the ship, rather than the actual value of the cargo itself.
Yeah, which kind of brings me on to some of the next questions, which Julie Brummel on Instagram wanted to know sort of how many people, were the people who drowned ever found and their bodies retrieved?
It's an excellent question, and the answer is yes. About 1,500 people died in the Titanic tragedy. About 700 survived, a little bit over 700 survived. And, of course, relatives of lost ones wanted, ships to go and look for them afterwards. And there were a couple of ships that did so, the Minia and the Mackay Bennett. And they went out to the wreck site area and they recovered a number of bodies. I think about 70, but it may be more. It may even be less, but I think about 70. In any event, they recovered a number of bodies and they were then given burials. Many of them were buried at sea. So, yes, they were. They did recover bodies.
And Cameron John Acton, sort of following on from that, wants to know what was Halifax's role in the recovery operation?
Absolutely. Well, the rescue ships, as it were, to get bodies were in fact run out of Halifax. So it was a very important sort of supply station for that. And a number of the bodies which were recovered were actually brought aboard onto land at Halifax, and rather grisly scene, but lots of coffins and things going up to the Halifax cemetery where a number of the Titanic victims have headstones and are in fact buried. So it was a sad time in Halifax for everyone around the time of the Titanic, but Halifax did play an important role in supporting the rescue and aftermath of the sinking.
Yeah. Here for Ada wanted to know, is it likely that there were still people alive who were trapped on the ship when it hit the seabed?
I think not. No. Okay. Titanic sank very slowly indeed, and she sank on an even keel. So everyone would have had time to get up to the top deck. I think some people may have been trapped behind railings and in ropes and things like that as the stern sank. And many people would have been sucked down with the ship, with the suction, as she went down, sucked into portholes and that sort of thing. But most people would have been in the water when they drowned. Most people on Titanic, in fact, actually died of hypothermia because the water was below freezing where Titanic sank. And in fact, the life expectancy in the water was about 20 minutes, if you were lucky.
Right, okay. What sort of temperatures are we looking at regarding the water and sort of just generally?
Well, the Gulf Stream water around where the Titanic sank was about 10 to 15 degrees Celsius, so quite sort of, you know, okay temperature. And one could have lived in that for quite a while, possibly 2 hours. But I'm afraid the Titanic sank in a little tributary, a little river, if you like, of the Labrador Current, which was filled with fresh meltwater from the Arctic. And that was about -2 degrees. And I'm afraid the cold water didn't mix very well with the warm water. And so it was just absolutely freezing cold where Titanic sank. And that's why no one survived who did not eventually make it into a lifeboat.
Right, OK. We've got an interesting question from Lua Colt on Instagram. It's not one that I've heard before. Is how did the Chief Baker survive despite being drunk? Is that like a fact?
Yes, no, I think it sort of is. He says he had a lot to drink. The problem with that physiologically is that if you do have a lot to drink, it doesn't necessarily help. It can, in fact, shorten your life expectancy in water. I think it's more likely he survived because he was wearing a lot of layers. But he does say he was drunk. So if we take him at his word, another reason is that he says that when he stepped off the back of the Titanic, he didn't get his head wet. Now, one thing that makes me believe that is, it was a very calm night and Titanic sank very slowly. So you can believe it from a physical perspective. But also, it may have been that not getting his head wet could really have helped for him to survive for longer. But maybe he did just have so much alcohol in his bloodstream that it acted as antifreeze.
So what's his story then? Did he claim to have survived the water or did he get onto a lifeboat? Yes.
Well, both. So he went up to, well, he was having a drink apparently in the pantry towards the back of the ship. He heard everyone running over the deck to run, sort of stampede to the back of the ship once all the lifeboats had gone and as the Titanic was dipping down. So he thought, crikey, and I better get out of here. And he went up to the rear deck and he was standing by the railings at the sort of round counterstern of Titanic. And he decided that it was better to be on the outside of the railings than trapped on the inside. So as Titanic tipped up further and further, he slowly climbed over the railings and stood on the back outside of Titanic, almost where it was written Titanic, Liverpool, on the back of Titanic there, and just rode it like an elevator, as he said, as it went down, and then swam off without even any getting his head wet. And then he struck out and swam to a lifeboat, which there was no room in the lifeboat. But eventually they made room for him and they pulled him in. Now, he says he was actually swimming in the water for about 2 hours. And then he didn't really get in the lifeboat until they were boarding the Carpathia. But I'm not convinced that's true. I don't think he could have survived for that long in the water. But certainly he spent some time in the water and then managed to get into a lifeboat.
Wow. Okay. Why did J.P. Morgan and his wife back out of going on the ship? Were they really ill? I guess he's kind of come back to...
Yes, no, I think they did. I think he did have a head cold. I think he had a bit of flu. Didn't feel up to it. I mean, imagine someone like J.P. Morgan. He'd actually have loved to have been on the maiden voyage because it was his money that had financed the White Star Line to build the vessel. And it would have been a lot of wealthy people like the Carters and people like that that were on board. The Astors, of course, were on board. So he would have known personally a lot of the first class passengers. So he would have wanted to be there. He had booked his cabin, which you don't do sort of lightly. But he certainly didn't cancel out of superstition or anything like that. He cancelled either because he had a cold, which I think he did have, or because he was very busy or something else happened with work, you can imagine. I'm not certain of this, but I imagine he was, in fact, on the Olympics maiden voyage. So Titanic's maiden voyage would have been slightly less important than Olympics. And he might have felt, oh, I've kind of done that, if you see what I mean. He was at the launch. He was at the launch of both ships as well, I think. So, yes, but thereby he managed to be saved, as it were.
Yeah. Another popular question is whether it's true that the engineers and people actually did sort of say that, not even God could sink this ship, that it was an unsinkable vessel.
Yes. Kind of. I can imagine that being said. And I'm going to say yes, sort of, to that. The reason I'm being quite careful on that is that what the White Star Line said was that the watertight subdivision of Titanic rendered her practically unsinkable. Okay. So in other words, what they were saying was she was unsinkable under any circumstances that they could reasonably imagine. The problem is they could not reasonably imagine the circumstance that she did sink under. Yes, it may well have been said, but I think that may have grown a bit in the telling.
Okay. So another Instagram question here from McMumio was asking, was there sort of survivor's guilt after the tragedy, and was it recognised as such at the time?
Well, it is interesting. Certainly a lot of the men who survived did feel guilty. And you find in their accounts, they explain why they survived and why they, you know, why it was okay for them to survive. They were a bit vilified. There was suspicion that men survived the sinking generally. But I don't know about survivor guilt. I think it's more what we'd now call post-traumatic stress disorder, a bit like shell shock. Mm-hmm. And what we do find is that many passengers never talked about the Titanic because it would bring back, you know, memories and things. In fact, there's one story where Lightoller, who is Second Officer Charles Lightoller, who was the most senior surviving officer of the Titanic, on a hot day in London, he went up to have a cold bath, and then he didn't come down again. And his wife wondered what was happening. And she went up and she found him with a look of horror on his face, almost sort of what we would now call catatonic. And basically, he thinks that the cold water of the bath brought back to him the absolute horror of him diving into the sea when the Titanic sank. So I think a lot of people live with the stress for a long time, and a lot of people did not talk about it. But actually, I think everyone who survived was actually pretty thankful to survive, you know, when so many people died.
Yeah. I mean, what sort of support was given to the survivors?
Well, not as much as would be today, but nevertheless, the people of New York were very kind. So hospitals gave them beds, hostels as well, and charities gave them beds. Many people donated clothes, old clothes and things that were warm and dry for survivors. Obviously, the ones who got treated the worst were the crew. Their pay stopped from the moment the Titanic slipped under the water. So their pay stopped and they were hustled back to Southampton on the next ship, pretty much, that they could get away on. So they weren't treated very well. And there were some Chinese survivors, in fact. There were six Chinese survivors, and they were all sailors who were bound to go to another ship. And they were not given any help. They never even got into America. They were actually kept on board the Carpathia overnight when she docked, and then sent off to their next ship the next day without any support or help at all.
Wow, gosh. So sort of moving on to kind of perhaps the present day, where is the ship now? Is it still it's still where it sank, presumably?
Yeah, it's it's where it sank. So she sank in 41-49 north and about 49-50 west, something like that. So she's more or less, you could say, to the nearest degree, she's 42 north, 50 west, basically, which is where the Labrador Current flows into the Gulf Stream off the Grand Banks of Newfoundland in the North Atlantic. And she's still there now. Bob Ballard found her in, I think, 1985, but it might have been 1987. It was the 1st of September anyway. He found her, and he found her from her debris field. So what he did was he sort of flew, if you like, in his submersible, although it was obviously a remote submersible, but he flew along the debris field. So little cups and little bits of almost wreckage, if you like, that was on the seabed. He followed that flume, if you like, as it got more and more dense, and he knew that he would end up getting to the ship. And he found the boilers, and the boilers fell out of Titanic as she tore in part and sank. And so the boilers probably would have been filled with water, and they would have probably sunk straight down. So that was probably the exact spot where Titanic was at 2:20 in the morning when she broke up. Although obviously a little bit of current, Titanic was 2 miles deep, so you allow a one knot current. So they would have also drifted a few meters south as they kited down to the bottom.
Were there any sort of earlier attempts to find the wreck and, you know, do anything about it, retrieve things or retrieve the ship?
I believe there were. I'm not as expert as I perhaps should be on those earlier attempts, but people were trying to find the wreck from 1912. Straight away, people were like, let's find the ship. But technology, you know, hadn't really caught up. And Ballard was very clever because he worked for Wood's whole oceanographic institution. And he had to go and find a nuclear submarine that had sunk. And so his job was to find that. And he said to the US Navy, he said, if I find the submarine really quickly, can I use the equipment and manpower and budget that I've saved in finding it quickly, can I use that to go and find the Titanic? So he made jolly sure, and they said yes, so he made jolly sure he found the nuclear submarine extremely quickly, and that gave him a window to then circle back to Titanic's crash site and find her.
Right, okay. And, you know, someone else is asking on Instagram, you know, what will happen to the ship? Will it eventually disintegrate and disappear? Or do you think there will be, you know, will we be able to get any more of the ship up and should we as well?
Well, no, absolutely. Very interesting point. So Titanic sank in international waters. So in a way, no one owns her, in a way. There is a sort of treaty between, I think, France and Britain and America and things like that to protect the wreck. But it's a voluntary treaty and not all countries have signed up to it. So at the moment, there's quite a lot of sort of tourism to the wreck site, and there is some removing of artifacts from the wreck site, which is a bit of a shame. Mm. But on the other hand, she will just rust away eventually. I don't think she's going to rust away as quickly as people say she is. I think there'll still be some metal down there for another 100 or 200 years. However, within 500 years, she probably will have gone completely. And actually, I was talking on another interview the other day about trying to even raise the Titanic and have her back in Belfast on the slipway there. And one could actually do that. And one could leave the ship site as a memorial to those who died and be very sacred about that. But actually one, I think we should actually preserve what is left of Titanic now and carefully lift her. And it wouldn't cost as much as making the next blockbuster film about the Titanic.
Do you think that's likely to happen? Is that something that might happen?
I think it could. I think if I put a lot of effort into it, it probably would. But I'm probably busy with other things at the moment. But if anyone's listening who would like to raise the Titanic, then come and talk to me and we'll do it.
Okay. So we've just got a few sort of popular search engine questions that would be quite good to deal with. How did Titanic compare to the size of the kind of the cruise ships that we have today?
Well, she was about the same size as quite a famous liner called the Canberra. Okay, so the answer to that would be she's quite a lot smaller, about a half the size of a sort of very large crude carrier. So she's smaller. So she would seem today to be a sort of like a small cruise ship, if you like, not a giant cruise ship. So ships now can be a sort of 1,000 feet long. Some of them can be 1,500 feet long, and Titanic was 800, nearly 900 feet long. So she would still seem big, but if she was moored next to a giant oil tanker, she would actually seem quite, not so huge.
Okay. Another question is, how many dogs survived the sinking? Or did any dogs survive?
No dogs survived. They were kept in a cage on the deck. And they were set free. Well, we're told they were set free at the end. I can imagine that. I can actually imagine that happening. Mm. And there were reports of bodies found clinging to dogs in the water. But the dogs would have also succumbed to freezing quite quickly as well. So none of the dogs survived. Oh, I'm telling a lie, because I think one of the first class ladies had a little Pekingese lap dog. And I think she actually took it in a lifeboat with her. And she was a bit ridiculed for having saved her little dog. So I think I'm going to revise that to one.
Okay.
But if anyone's listening and wants to tweet back that, you know, that it was more or less, I'd be happy to hear from them.
Okay. And just finally, do we have like an inventory of, you know, things like how many dinner plates, bath towels and things like that were actually on board Titanic?
I don't think so, really. I mean, I think with a lot of work in the archives, one could find quite a lot of evidence about, for example, Olympic and how much of these things she had. And Titanic would have had almost exactly the same numbers of all those things. But it's a very complicated thing. Like, no one knows how many people did in fact survive the Titanic. No one knows the exact number. Literally, we'll never know now how many people actually survived. And also, it's unclear actually exactly how the cabins were arranged on Titanic, because there was some flexibility to the cabins on Titanic. And we don't know from the records exactly how they were, jigged at the time. So what I'm trying to say is, although there are lots of records, there is a lot of uncertainty about what happened as well.
Why don't we know for sure how many people survived? I mean, actually, there's kind of debate as well as to how many people were on board, weren't they?
Absolutely. I mean, the number I go for is 2,227 on board, but that's not exact. And the number I go for is 705 survivors, but that is not known exactly. Could have been 711, for example. And I think the reason is that when you're keeping records of that many people coming and going and toing and froing, there were some firemen who were late and who didn't get on. There were a couple of people who got off in Ireland that were supposed to not have got off in Ireland, for example. So what I'm saying is there's probably a grey area of about 10 to 15 people that you're just not quite sure. Were they supposed to be on but weren't on? Were they on or not? And there are other things, like some survivors very sadly died in the lifeboats of exposure. So then it's like, are they a survivor or are they a victim? Obviously, they're a victim. But what I mean is, it's quite difficult to know exactly. And I suppose at the end of the day, you might want to say poor record keeping, actually. But I think it's more likely that even if a giant aircraft crashed today, you might not be absolutely sure if a certain family was on it or not that was supposed to be on it, for example.
That was Tim Moulton. Tim is a leading expert on the Titanic and the author of several books about the subject, including 101 Things You Thought You Knew About the Titanic But Didn't. He also contributed to an essential guide to the Titanic in the July issue of BBC History Revealed, which also includes features on the Vikings, Lady Jane Grey, and the Bloody Code. You can find that on sale now. Thanks for listening. This podcast was produced by Ben Hewitt, Jack Bateman, and Brittany Colley. Join us tomorrow when I'll be speaking to Alice Roberts about prehistoric Britain.